Though I do love my makeup routine, I feel like I want to spice it up a little bit. I could use a bit of a refresher because I've been doing the same thing for a while. However, I will definitely still use the same makeup line I've been using for 4 years now. And so whether I'm just simply adding my Liquid Lash Extensions mascara by Thrive Cosmetics for an everyday touch of mascara look, or going all out with their highlighter, eyeliner, and eyeshadow for some full glam, I simply love applying Thrive Cosmetics to my face. And why? Well, the quality is honestly impeccable, and they support a great cause. It's even in the name, Thrive Cosmetics, Cause. So Thrive Cosmetics and Bigger Than Beauty Skincare aim to empower customers, employees, and giving partners to live confidently. And they practice responsive giving, donating high-performance products or much-needed funds to help communities thrive. I can't emphasize enough how great their mascara is. I'll never give that up. Even if as I refresh and redo my makeup routine, I'll always be using their Liquid Lash Extensions, because their unique formula creates tubes around each lash, lengthening them. And it's super easy to remove. It just slides right off with some warm water and there's no smudging. Plus, it has some nourishing ingredients which help support longer, stronger, and healthier looking lashes over time. And as someone with blonde eyebrows, I also appreciate their Infinity Waterproof Eyebrow Liner. This easy-to-use waterproof pencil holds like a wax and blends like a powder. I love it. You can't beat it. And so you can line your brows to give them structure and create natural-looking strokes. I love the natural look to fill in sparse areas. It even comes with a spoolie brush to lift and tame your brows after application, and they have 8 shades to choose from, and it adjusts to your natural brow color for a perfect match every time. Pretty awesome. So refresh your everyday look with Thrive Cosmetics, luxury beauty that gives back. Right now, you can get an exclusive 10% off your first order at thrivecosmetics.com/magic. That's Thrive Cosmetics, CauseMetics.com/magic for 10% off your first order.
You know, hip hop, you have the elements, right? You have the DJ, the MC, the graffiti artist, the b-boy, the b-girl, and you have the community, the culture. Hip hop was created as a way, you know, really essentially to fuse gang violence and create, you know, as a grassroots culture. And the yoga I was experiencing is like, it's very similar. It's like people just getting together, breathing, meditating, practicing. And it had this similar vibe of like it was very individually based. Like you had to do it yourself, but there was a community and there was unity, there was shared ethics. And so I just fell into it and I fell in love with it.
So excited to have you. Seriously, thank you so much for being here.
Oh, thanks, Raquel. It's good to be with you.
Yeah. Do people ever call you Nick or Nicholas?
Yeah, most people. So I mean, it depends. Like some people just have known me since I became MC Yogi, so they just refer to me like that. But either way is good.
And also, I have indeed flowed to your music in my practice, and I'm pretty certain, like I'm confident that Shanti, Peace Out, is the Shavasana theme song of the decade, because almost every yoga teacher plays it in corpse pose wherever I am at practicing on Mama Earth. And so I've listened to that a million times, I think. And I've even followed a yoga flow of yours taught by you online, and I loved it. And I thought, hey, he should come on the podcast. So that's when I reached out, and now you're here. And so I'm so thankful.
Oh, thank you so much. Yeah. That Shanti track is a deep, deep track. I think that we recorded that in maybe 2008. So it's been around for a while, but it's a lot of people have used it all over the world. So it's really cool.
And they're still using it because it gets us deep, deep, deep into that moment. I've released so much. So thank you. You've healed a lot more than you even know.
Well, I'm just happy to be here.
Yeah. And just to begin, before we dive into the deep stuff, I'm just curious, what is the first thing that comes to mind that lights you up most in this season of your life?
Right now, just really super stoked to be alive, really. I mean, there's a lot of things. You know, I recently wrote a book, which I was really excited to share with the world. It's called Spiritual Graffiti, and sort of my journey of, you know, growing up in the Bay Area. I was a juvenile delinquent, got kicked out of three schools, got arrested a bunch of times. I was a graffiti artist and ended up living in a group home for at-risk youth for 2.5 years. And then I discovered yoga and meditation thanks to my dad, and then went on to study with a lot of amazing teachers and mentors in my life. And just looking back when I was writing the book, reflecting, it's like, wow, there's so many opportunities where I could have just, you know, because I was in some major car accidents and some near-death experiences, and so many times where that could have been it. And, you know, I'm still here. So I feel like there's got to be a reason. And I'm just grateful, you know, that I made it through so many of those trials and tribulations, that I could be sitting here with you today and to be able to share some of that story. It's really cool to be able to reflect and see how far I've come.
Wow. Okay. You're truly a walking inspiration. And I feel like that is, it's so interesting. I think that's one way so many people can connect with a story like this. But I've noticed people that have had many different struggles, such as substance abuse, or they're drug addicts, alcoholics, foodaholics, or deeply depressed, or had near-death experiences like you talk about. It's so interesting that many of them, they might just take one yoga class or read one book on spirituality or have that one connected experience in meditation, and they just get a taste of that high that they once craved from something else. Then instead they find another high that feeds their soul. And then they begin to really dive into so much of the soulful wisdom. Yoga and spirituality attracts so many people deep in darkness.
I think down deep, all of us, we all, you know, just speaking from my experience, but I have the sense that all of us know that a lot of what's fed to us is just not really based in truth. We're all looking for ways to sort of cope and deal with a lot of the traumas that we've been through. We all have a scarred heart. Like, none of us have had an easy go of it. Even, you know, people who maybe are economically well off, you know, oftentimes there's a lot of deep issues with the family and stuff people don't even talk about. And so I think we're all walking around with a lot of pain and a lot of suffering. And you know, we're all trying to figure out ways to cope with all that tension, stress, and anxiety. And, you know, many of us, including myself, like, we have to try a lot of things before we find, you know, what works. And for me, I felt like I was stumbling through the darkness for a long time. And it wasn't until I sort of fell into my first yoga practice that I really discovered a way of feeling free and being happy and content and peaceful that wasn't reliant on anything external. It was just me, my breath, my attention, and my ability to go into myself and to reconnect with, you know, what's true. Not what other people are telling me is true, but what I, through my own experiments, because yoga is like a science, it's like a medicine, so you have to do it over and over again until you find out, you know, how it works. Just through my own practice, you know, I figured out and had that experience that there's something much greater than my mind, much deeper than my thoughts, much bigger than religion, bigger than philosophy, that's greater than, you know, all these things externally. Like, I found that, had that experience of that deep, deep state of just feeling peace and bliss and connection and unity. But if anyone would have told me about that, I probably wouldn't have believed them, because I think I had to experience it directly for myself in order to know it was real. And up until that point in my life, I tried so many things and I just felt so much suffering. And, you know, when I started to practice yoga, that suffering started to slowly, you know, dissolve and not have such a grip on me. And I was able to kind of free myself up, and I'm still engaged in that process, that practice, those experiments. But what I found is that it works. So I just keep going back to it over and over again.
Wow. Why do you devote your life then to this practice?
For me, it's my lifeline. Like, you know, meditation is, I think, the number one source of misery in the world is the mind. The mind can take a heaven and turn it into a hell. It can create problems where there aren't any problems. It can create divisions. And, you know, we can see shadows and just tell all these stories and get caught up in the web of our own illusions. And we all suffer and struggle with that. You know, being able to manage our mind, and it takes training, it takes discipline, it takes practice. And I can't say that I've mastered or perfected anything. I'm just really deeply involved and engaged in the question of, like, how can I you know, how can I become a better yogi? How can I be a better person? And it just keeps leading me back to my practice. And fortunately, the yoga tradition is so deep and so rich. There's so many different facets, so many different tools and techniques that you can develop, so many different branches and schools of thought, different philosophies. It's, yoga is like an ocean. And so whenever I sort of submerge and immerse and saturate myself in that, in those teachings, and I really go deep in my practice, like I feel so much better. You know, it's like going, you know, to the car wash, or I call the karma wash, where you just get that new karma smell. That's it.
Karma wash. Yoga is like an ocean. When you reflect on those old days before you found yoga and before you were walking this path to discover this light, do you ever go back and reflect on those old days to write new music?
Oh yeah, all the time. I mean, those, you know, our past experiences, they never really leave us. You know, it's like the lines, the creases in our hands, you know, our wrinkles, our scars, like all of that is from everything that we experienced before. And so, you know, it's shaped our character. And I reflect all the time, just looking back at all the things that I experienced, good, bad, ugly, and all the things that I was able to survive. And I think that it was all necessary in the sense that it kind of led me to where I am today. And so I look back, you know, with a grateful heart, just, you know, I give thanks that I'm alive, and, you know, there's still time, there's still opportunity. I can still practice, I can still move, I'm here, I'm with my family, my friends. I feel like that's the most valuable, precious thing, is to really, instead of focusing on everything we don't have and everything that's in the future and everything we want, every time I stop and look back and see it, like just how many blessings, is how much life I've been able to live and place I've been able to travel. And I don't know, it just makes me really grateful, and it kind of shifts my mind and my perception. And I go from complaining, like calm plane, to a more calm plane. Like I feel, you know, I feel more peaceful, more happy, because if for so many years I was always in a state of looking at what I didn't have, and you know, what wasn't good enough, and what was broken, and I think the moment that I started practicing and I was able to kind of shift my attention back in toward everything that's working, and really build on that foundation and be grateful for everything that's working, that it gives me more of a sort of platform to stand on, and I can move forward with more confidence, more grace, and more ease. And so it's a practice. I got to keep coming back to it all the time, because the mind is slippery and it falls into illusion very quickly.
Oh yeah. See, isn't that so interesting? Once you do begin to share with the world these messages that feel as though you're sharing messages from the soul. Isn't it interesting that people will assume that it's as if you have it all figured out and all together, yet at the same time, they don't know that, of course, that mind can so easily still slip in and take the wheel. But that's when the practices, the yogic philosophy comes in, and that's when you start to really implement those tools in order to shift that.
Yeah, and often we tend to just see the appearance that people want to project, you know, like whether it's social media or, you know, even just in person, you know, people are presenting themselves in a certain way because it's their survival
rhetoric,
mode.
Yeah,
like you want to be secure and not let anybody know if you're going through struggling or suffering. And you know, there's a lot of mm-hmm. drug addiction and stuff, and people kind of mask all that. And I think one of the greatest strengths is, you know, to really develop the ability to be vulnerable and be honest and connect, and it doesn't always have to be shiny and happy all the time. You know, there's a tremendous bliss, there's tremendous joy and peace, but you know, we're not always in that space. Like we're, you know, speaking for myself, like I'm, you know, flickering in and out of it. And that's why it's so important to have, you know, good community, friends, family. You know, I'm very lucky, you know, because I have an amazing wife who I think you're going to be interviewing as well.
Right after you.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. That's one reason why I encourage everyone and myself, I even have to re-encourage myself to be raw and to be vulnerable and to speak what is going on with this human at this time, and also encourage my guests to express their raw truth, because that is really what heals. That's really that golden light that heals, because people can really relate and recognize that they're not alone. And loneliness is what can drive us into the darkness and allow that mind to take over.
Yeah. And then, you know, just in being really honest, like, you know, sometimes I see a lot of people just being really raw and vulnerable and oversharing all the time on social media and using it as a way to manipulate, because it's like, you know, suck people into your drama. And I think that that's, you know, so it's always like a nuanced fine line, seeking that middle path of like being really honest, but also not like feeding the illusion of the ego, which creates a lot of problems where there doesn't even necessarily need to be any problems. So I think that's what the yogis call the razor's edge. You know, it's like exerting effort, putting forth energy, really developing your practice, your meditation, your yoga, but also not getting swept up in all the stories about yourself, thinking that you're more important or special than anyone else. It's for me, like, yoga kind of levels the playing field. Like, it helps me to kind of get out of my own way and hopefully not be like projecting all my stuff onto anybody else, and just kind of, you know, really working to be just like a calm, clear presence, which is, man, that is, in the Bhagavad Gita, it says like, it's like trying to tame your mind, like trying to tame the wind. It's very challenging.
Mm-hmm. So then how do you decipher the illusion of the ego and perhaps that inner voice that is letting you know it's okay to share this specific vulnerability, or just share whatever, or experience whatever?
Yeah, I think a good way to sort of measure and gauge that I found is like, is this coming from a place of fear, or is this coming from a place of love, being of service? And sometimes fear rears its head all the time, and it's not a bad thing. I think oftentimes, you know, we were on a panel the other week, and my wife was on the panel with me, Amanda, and we were talking, and someone had asked her the question, like, how do you deal with fear? Because Amanda, she's an amazing muralist and graffiti painter, and you know, she has to, sometimes those buildings are like three stories high and stuff, and she's scared of heights.
Wow.
And and it's like, even as a performer, like going out in front of an audience or being a public speaker, it's, you know, you have to look at fear, and instead of fear becoming the wall that stops you, like, fear has to become the door. It has to become the fuel. It has to become your friend. You have to become familiar with that feeling so that you're like, okay, fear is showing up. That means I'm close to something great. So I'm going to just listen to it and turn that fear into my teacher. I'm not going to let it, persuade me to shut down, but I am going to listen to it, because there might be some wisdom. Like, fear is coming up for a reason. Like, maybe there's something I need to be careful of here. So I'm going to listen to it, but I'm not going to let it stop me. I'm going to use that fear to propel me forward onto the stage or onto the podcast or whatever I have to do. Because I honestly, I'm really pretty shy, like introverted person, really. So I have to really kind of move through that. But now it's become like second nature. I've done it so many times where really it doesn't affect me as much as it used to.
See, every introvert listening, every shy one listening, take note. Look, MC Yogi right here, he has allowed himself to step into and become whatever he thought of, whatever you desired, in a sense, because you're not only a musician and a yoga teacher because you felt called to pursue that, but you even wrote a book as a cherry on top. And so from an outside perspective, you know, that someone that doesn't know you, people might think like, oh, it was seamless and or that easily happened because he already had gained an audience from yada yada, but you still have to face your own fear, and you've still battled and other challenges along the way. So what would you advise someone that really, really allows fear or barriers or challenges or the belief that they can't hold them back?
I can only really speak from my own experience, because it's all I really know.
Well, exactly. I only want your voice and your words.
Well, that's a great question, and I think you know, the best thing you can do is to face it and to sit with it and to ask it questions and to be in conversation. Like, what am I afraid of? Why am I afraid of this? And then, you know, really mine it, like try to get some good information from that, and then take that and put it in the fire, like, and just move forward and just let it, you know, let it become a part of the energy and the momentum. Instead of fear being a downward flowing force that's pulling you down, you kind of, you know, you spin it so that now, you know, now it's behind you and below you, and it's propelling you forward and lifting you up, instead of like being in front of you and above you, like holding you down. You just, like, you kind of flip it, and then you do that by facing it. Now, if you don't face it, then that's the energy that's going to bury you. But if you turn and face it, look it in the eye, acknowledge it, and say, I'm not afraid, because that fear is myself. And you, it's really looking yourself in the eyes and then being in conversation, like, why are you showing up here? What do I need to learn? What do I need to understand? And then once you gather that knowledge by just listening and being in that process, that inquiry, then you can spin it, and it becomes your, you know, the wind, and that force is kind of propelling you forward, lifting you up. But essentially, it's just energy, you know, it's all just energy. And how do you turn that energy into like a renewable sort of resource of fuel?
No wonder your music is also so raw, because you listened when you were seeking that wisdom, after you had the experience and the turmoil in every challenge that you had went through. And now you carry so much wisdom with you. Well, it's always been in you, but you're sharing it with the world, and not only your music, but with your yoga and whatever you decide to create. And you know what? One thing that I love, by the way, I just have to say, is that I love how you interweave yogic philosophy and this wisdom into your music. And you also will share many stories that I've never even known before, like Hindu stories. And they are there for us to connect more deeply with both the present moment and ourself with a capital S. Can you think of any short story that comes to mind at the top of your head, perhaps one that you wrote about?
Yeah, there's so many stories, like volumes of stories. There's a story that I never really, you know, put it into a song, but there's a story of a friend that I was spending some time with a few years back. So older gentleman, really cool, amazing guy. Like, he's a carpenter. And he would spend a lot of time in and out of jail. He was a heroin addict, and he had taken a bad batch of heroin. And this is in San Francisco. And he flatlined, and he ended up in the emergency room, and he actually died. Like all of his vital signs stopped. The heroin was full of flesh-eating bacteria. It was poison. And he injected it, and he died. And he had this experience, and he had shared it with me. I was sitting in his at his dining room table, and he was telling me about what he had saw, what he saw on the other side. And he said, "I was ushered to this space. It was like a field, and it was luminous, and it was a lot like, you know, nature that we see here on Earth, but it was more subtle, more fluid, and the colors were different, and." He felt himself be guided to this lake, and he had sat on the edge of this lake, and he just sat there and he waited. And this woman appeared, like her image. She emerged kind of hovering above this lake, and he sat there looking up at her and just like was filled with this love. He just felt this overwhelming sense of compassion and kindness. And she began to communicate with him, and he said she was like a Buddha, and she was just beautiful and just radiant and exuding just so much love and bliss and blessings. And she said, you're not finished. She said, go back and turn your suffering into your strength. And with those words, he kept repeating, turn your suffering into your strength, turn your suffering into your strength, turn your suffering into your strength. And then he felt himself like rush back into his body, and his vitals came back. His heart started beating again. They were able to resuscitate him, and he survived. And he went on, and with his carpentry skills, he went on and became like a building temples and stuff like that, like Buddhist temples. And but I remember that, and when he told me that, like you were talking about getting chills, like I got chills, like I felt like a bell had rung when he said that, because that teaching of like turning, take your suffering, everything that's hard that happened to you, all the trauma, and we all have trauma, and no one comes into this world in an easy way. It's traumatic, you know, like all the things we have to go through, all the lies we have to navigate through, all the, you know, our society, our culture. So we all have this pain and this suffering that we're having to heal. And that teaching, take your suffering and turn it into your strength, really became like a guiding light or force for me, because I think, you know, I'm a student of comic books, and, you know, I grew up, I'm an illustrator, and I love to draw. I was a graffiti artist growing up, and always been fascinated and inspired by superheroes, which is why I'm so attracted and drawn to mythology. And one of the common themes, and, you know, shout out and respect, moment of silence for Stan Lee, who just passed away. He's a great pioneer in the comic book industry. And he used to say that the prerequisite for becoming a superhero is almost always every hero has had some trauma, something horrible has happened to them, the loss of a parent, the loss of a loved one, some tragedy. But they were able to somehow take that energy and spin it and turn it into a set of skills and a strength and ability that they could in turn go out and serve the greater good. And that's what creates a hero. Whereas like a villain, something traumatic happened to them as well, but instead of processing that pain and dealing with it, they kind of lash out against the world, because essentially they're fighting with themselves, and that's being sort of reflected all around them. Whereas a hero who's not always perfect, most times the heroes are still very human, very flawed, even in like the great mythology, it's very humbling, because the heroes like often fail and make mistakes, but there is some kind of desire to want to be good and do good. And so I always love that story that my friend Craig shared with me about, you know, going to the other side and receiving that message and coming back and being able to take your pain and turn it into something beautiful.
Yeah. And that was heroic of him. And also yourself. I mean, you took that energy, that pain that you went through, and you spun it and you turned to the skill of yoga and hip hop. What's fascinating is I love that you mixed the two, and it's as if you pioneered the union of the two. That is part of your superhero isms in this life. And so I'm curious what sparked this, and how does it feel to see it pick up so much steam, because people are practicing yoga and doing hip hop everywhere now, or wait, vice versa. Yoga while listening to hip hop.
When I started, so I've been practicing for about 20 years. And when I started it, yoga was becoming popular, but it wasn't nearly, you know, what it's like today with like, you know, yoga clothing companies and and festivals and all the kinds of stuff that's happening now, which is great. You know, all that's good, man. When I was starting, it was like very alternative and kind of underground, and it wasn't very mainstream. And, you know, when I'd go and practice in San Francisco, most of the people, you know, are like tattooed and, you know, kind of, you know, musicians and artists, and it was like more fringe. And so when I got into it, like I was excited, because there's all these group of people doing all this crazy stuff and practicing yoga. And it was like this like subculture. And I was like, oh, this is cool, man. And I never really set out I never thought I'd be a teacher. I never even really thought I would be a musician. I always, in my mind's eye, I thought that when I was young, my dream was always to be like a comic book illustrator or a cartoonist. So when I found yoga after living in a group home for about 2.5 years, so I was getting into a lot of trouble and failing all my classes and getting kicked out of schools. When I found yoga, it was a combination of like the postures to me were reminiscent of breakdancing because, you know, my friends, we all grew up, you know, breakdancing, painting graffiti, DJing, MCing and all that. And so it was very similar. And then when I started to study about the philosophy, you know, there was so much that it just seemed so connected to hip hop. Like, you know, hip hop, you have the elements, right? You have the DJ, the MC, the graffiti artist, the B-boy, the B-girl, and you have the community, the culture. Hip hop was created as a way, you know, really essentially to fuse gang violence and create, you know, as a grassroots culture. And the yoga I was experiencing is like, it's very similar. It's like people just getting together, breathing, meditating, practicing. And it had this similar vibe of like it was very individually based. Like you had to do it yourself, but there was a community and there was unity, there was shared ethics. And so I just fell into it and I fell in love with it. And I never really set out to like even really make hip hop music with yoga philosophy, but I was just deeply, deeply, deeply vibing on my practice and on what I was learning, traveling to India and studying with my teachers. And because I'd grown up listening to hip hop and painting, and they just kind of came together. And yeah, just kind of, it's like a beautiful marriage.
Oh, yes, it is such a beautiful marriage. And you talked about teachers that you studied with in India. Didn't you study with Sri K. Pattabhi Joyce?
I did study with Pattabhi Joyce, yeah, for many years. That was sort of in the later phase of his life. Guruji or Pattabhi, Sri K. Pattabhi Joyce, he was in his 80s by the time I met him.
Wow. What was the greatest message or lesson that you received from him?
Just his smile, really. Wow. Like, you know, there's an old saying that people don't really remember what you say, they remember how you said it. And just being in, whenever I have the opportunity to be in the presence of someone who's practiced yoga for a long, long time, there's a tangible energy and a feeling like there's just like a good quality. And, you know, I was just really lucky because I had a lot of teachers. One in particular was my teacher, Dorothy Divak, who just recently passed away last week, actually. She was in her 80s and she was an amazing, incredible being of light. She's originally from Harlem, New York. And she became one of my mentors. And she taught me really a lot of her teachings came from A Course in Miracles, which I wasn't too familiar with. So she kind of introduced me to that. And these teachings like only love is real and what is not real can never exists and what is real will always exist. It can never be threatened or destroyed. And, you know, that had a big impact on me. I went and saw her in the Bronx recently. She was in hospice and in the late, sort of the final days of her life. And Amanda and I went to be by her bedside and she was just beaming, just so beautiful and just like so regal and so divine and filled with so much joy. And you could just see all her years of just studying and faith and the teachings and how it was just right there with her, right up to the moment where she crossed the threshold and left her body. And she was diagnosed with brain tumors. And one thing she told me when I saw her was, they can remove the tumor, but they can't remove the humor. Yeah. And she's, you know, so I got to give thanks to my teachers, Dorothy and Larry and Pattabhi Joyce and so many of the great, great, amazing people I've had the great honor and privilege to spend time with. I feel really lucky and fortunate. And actually, that's one of the reasons why I wrote the book, Spiritual Graffiti, was to share a lot of the teachings that they passed on to me. And knowing that a lot of them aren't alive anymore, I thought, you know, it's a great way to carry on that legacy.
I can't wait to read your book.
Yeah, a lot of people have been saying, like, some people, you know, they've been getting the book on. I did the audio for the book on tape.
Oh, that's what I'm going to listen to.
Yeah, so a lot of people like that because they're just driving in their car or whatever, and they can just put it on and enjoy the story.
This country was built on a distinctly American work ethic, but today, work is in trouble. We've outsourced most of our manufacturing to other countries, and with that, we sent away good jobs and diminished our capability to make things. American Giant is a clothing company that's pushing back against this tide. They make a variety of high-quality clothing and activewear, like sweatshirts, jeans, dresses, jackets, and so much more. All made right here in the USA, from growing the cotton and adding the final touches. So when you buy American Giant, you create jobs for seamsters, cutters, and factory workers in towns and cities across the United States. And it's about more than an income. Jobs bring pride. Purpose. They stitch people together. If all that sounds good to you, visit American-Giant.com and get 20% off your first order when you use code STAPLE20 at checkout. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with promo code STAPLE20.
One question that does come to mind now after all that you've studied with every great, great human being and soul that you've studied with, do you now have a different perspective on death?
Yeah, I do. It's I think death is one of the greatest motivating factors for doing really good work. I think knowing how precious and valuable our time is and not wanting to waste it on half-ass work and doing shit that's not really important or meaningful. I think if you've been close to death, like I was, you know, I sat at the bedside when my grandfather passed away, his last breath blew across my face. And my grandfather was my hero growing up, still is. And I was really lucky. I got to spend a lot of time with him in the final stages of his life and got to be with him as he transitioned and left the body. And, he was always so committed to just doing really good work. And I think that's the greatest lesson that I'm learning now is that, you know, more precious than money, more precious than fame, more precious than anything that's external, any of these accolades or awards or anything like that. It's really, it's time. Time is the most valuable thing we have on earth, and how we spend that time, how we devote that time and what we give our time to. Most importantly is like whatever you're engaged in, just do it really good. Like make great work for not just yourself, but for everybody in your life. Like it leaves a legacy. And really lucky because I got to spend some amazing time with some really incredible people who are no longer in their body. And, you know, I'll never be able to, you know, see them again in that way. But I know that I was there with them and that I listened to them and I learned from them and I paid attention to them and I respected them and I loved them. And, you know, in that way, they're with me now because I carry that with me forward. And I would say spend time with older people, man. Like I feel our culture and, you know, especially in America, like we need to have more respect for our elders and more respect for, people who are in the later stages of life. It's such a blessing to be with them. We should always remember that.
Wow. I'm even going to take that message and put it in my pocket because... It's so true. You were talking about how people that have been practicing yoga for such a long time, there's just something about their presence that it's unparalleled because you just feel so much purity and love and wisdom. And I also keep going.
No, I'm just going to add to what you're saying. I think you're right on. And authenticity. I think that's the thing that I really sort of appreciate the most about, you know, those teachers that I got to spend time with, my grandfather, my first teacher, Larry, and my teacher, Dorothy. Like they were all just really authentic, like not trying to be anything, but just really themselves and really honest and just loving and so generous. And I think it's really, that's really, if you meet someone authentic, you know, it's so cool to be around them. There's a saying that, and I'm really lucky because I get to spend so much time with my wife, who's an amazing artist. And she does this talk because she has this project called 10,000 Buddhas, where she's been painting these graffiti Buddhas all over the world. And there's a quote by the Buddha, and it says, "If you meet a fool, if you find that you're spending time in the presence of people who are foolish and wasting time, wasting their energy. And they say, if that's the situation you're in, then it's better to be alone. But if you meet someone who's got a kind heart, someone who's true, a real friend, someone who's authentic, someone who's honest, someone who loves you, someone who cares for you, then it's better to walk with them all the way. Wow. Yeah, and so I think, you know, that's the most valuable thing we have is time, and the best thing we can do with our time is spend it with people we love.
I can't wait to talk to her.
Yes, Amanda's awesome.
And you also spend a lot of time, it seems, well, I don't know about a lot of time, but you do collaborate with a lot of very inspiring, soulful artists like Modest Yahoo and East Forest. And then, of course, one of my favorites, Trevor Hall, who has been on this podcast twice.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. And I'm so curious, how do these collabs manifest? If you could take us inside a studio for a moment and tell us what it is like when two talented musicians come together to create something for our souls to enjoy.
Well, working with Trevor Hall was just so easy and so fun. He just slid into the studio and we just dropped right in, and his contribution was just super awesome. And Modest Yahoo's similar experience recording together. I never thought that I'd get to work with him, and you know, just the stars aligned, everything fell into place. And East Forest, another great collaborator and a really talented musician. But all those things, I don't know, it's kind of a mystery. Like, they just kind of happen. Like, how do you meet people in your life? Like, how do you fall in love? Like, it's not really a recipe or a formula. I do think, you know, on some level, you probably want to have an intention. But the how is a mystery. It's, I guess, just stay focused on the what and let the universe take care of the how.
And the why. I think because you're also so strong in your why.
Yeah, why is key too.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. That is true.
Yeah. And also, thank you so much for doing so much great work and meaningful work. You were talking about how we shouldn't, you know, half-ass our work, but we should really commit to something that is meaningful. And that's not only going to serve ourselves, but serve the world. And I'm curious what your flow is like, if how you tap into your creative mode, or does that also just happen? It just, you don't know how, but it just does. Or do you actually have like a flow that you kind of feel?
My flow is sporadic, erratic, and ecstatic. Like, it's amazing. it's all over the place. It's at times super messy, and then at times super organized, and then, you know, at times none of it makes sense, at times it all makes sense. And it's just like it's a pulsation of galaxies of stars rushing in and out of the center, and sometimes be completely lost and bewildered, and sometimes the constellation is clear, everything is connected, and it's sort of like a dance like that.
That's beautiful. And also collaborating with your wife, that is so amazing that you get to spend the time with her, but you also collaborate with her and you perform with her and you create art. What is that like with somebody that you love?
Well, that's the best of both worlds. That's heaven on earth. Like, when everything is lined up and we get to teach together, or, you know, for many years when I was traveling and performing at festivals or in clubs, Amanda was doing the live visual art aspect of the show. And it's just really cool, because anyone who's ever had a road life or toured a lot knows that it's really hard, man. It's so difficult to be out on the road and be staying in hotels, and, you know, the rigors of in and out of planes, buses, cabs, Ubers, all that kind of stuff. And when you have someone who you love that's traveling with you, it just makes everything, like, it becomes a joy, because you get to share the experience together, take pictures, go find good food, meet new people. It just kind of doubles your happiness.
So, any advice, because I love that you both are yoga teachers together too, so any advice for aspiring yoga teachers today?
Just teach what you know, teach what you practice. And oftentimes, you know, sometimes people ask me, like, I'm so nervous to teach and da da da. And the one sort of piece of sort of counsel I would offer is that it's not about you. It's really not about you. It's not about me. It's not about you. It's really the yoga works. If you're practicing like yoga that you have tested on yourself and experimented with, and it's, you know, time tested, mother approved. Like, you know it works because you've had the experience that it works. You just need to remember that it works and to get out of the way and not, you know, insert too much of your own sort of neurosis or anxiety. Don't put that on your students. Don't make it about your ego or a performance or anything like that. Just really create this. It's a great service. Like, create a space where people can breathe and connect and relax and drop in. You know, maybe play some really, you know, beautiful, elegant music and get the temperature nice and the lighting good, and then just be present. And I think what people really respond to in my experience is that if you're in a real sort of loving, generous place and you just want to be of service, then people are going to have an awesome experience consistently. The yoga will do its thing. You know, we're just the guide by the side. So as long as you put the yoga first, it'll work.
Mm-hmm. Isn't it true that you and your wife used to do it every single day, except for maybe Christmas every year, like teach it at your studio?
Yeah, we taught all the classes. We've had a studio for, I think, over 15 years.
Wow. How did you balance it all? So much to...
Well, you start small and you go for the long haul. So you keep your overhead down and you do most of the lion's share of the work. You do it yourselves, and then you grow it by proving that you can offer a consistent quality experience, and then people will develop trust. But you can't be flighty. Like, we didn't even travel for probably the first 3 years, just so we could be, you know, devoted, disciplined, committed to the community. And it just grows over time. And then that became the platform to do all the other stuff that we do. And I think one of the biggest things for creative people is, you know, the tendency to want to make that your career out of the gate.
Yes. You know,
and people don't realize, yeah, if you put a lot of pressure on your craft, it could crush it, you know? So you have to really tend to it. It's like raising a child in a way. In those early years, those formidable years, like, you want to protect it, you know, you want to take care of it. You don't want to just put it out in the world right away. You got to develop it and create it and hone it. And then there'll come a time where the universe will let you know, okay, I think you're ready to kind of scale it.
Mm-hmm.
Follow that and just expands, and you just keep coming back to the basics, back to what that initial spark that inspired you in the beginning, so that you don't get too bitter or jaded. And just keep coming back and stay fresh, stay innocent, stay open, stay playful, stay clear. And most of all, just have fun with it. Because if you're having fun with it, then you'll do it for a really long time.
Yes. Oh, that's also great advice for any artist. I'm also going to ask you any advice for aspiring musicians out there. So any advice for them?
Just tune your instrument.
Just tune your instrument. That's so great. Are you willing to do a rapid fire round?
Yeah, let's do it. This is the bonus round?
It's a bonus round, but you got to spit it out.
Okay, I'm ready.
All right, dog or cat person?
Dog. Do I need a buzzer?
If you have one, that'd be fun.
I like both. I really do, but I'll lean toward dogs.
Me too. Okay. Write music in the morning or at night?
All day, every day.
All day. How about what time of day do you prefer to flow, morning or night?
All day, every day. It just comes when it comes.
What is your favorite song off the Only Love Is Real album?
I really like Road Home, the song with Trevor Hall. It's really fun.
Yes, we do. Yoga or music?
Art, because that's the combination of the two.
Ah, you are mixing all this up. Ashtanga or Vinyasa?
Vinyasa. I did Ashtanga for many years, but it's very rigid. Mm-hmm. And I'm just such a creative person. I need to kind of break out of boxes.
But it was a good foundation.
Absolutely. I mean, it gave me my chops.
Yeah. You can tell when teachers have a background in Ashtanga. And to be honest, my favorite teachers have had a background in Ashtanga because there's something more that they see.
Notice. Yeah. No, it's very energetic. And any time that you're doing something linked to the breath, you're infusing it with spirit. And I think that's the reason why I was so attracted to Ashtanga yoga, was because it was all about Ujjayi, deep breathing. And I carry that forward, and it has been really helpful for me.
Yeah. Favorite comic book superhero?
Ah, that's a tough one, man. There's so many. Boy.
Fine. Favorite three. That doesn't make it easier.
Yeah, I'll say the X-Men because there's so many of them. And definitely Spider-Man was a big one growing up. Batman. I mean, Doctor Strange is cool. There's so many.
Well, if you had a comic book superhero power, what would it be?
My power would be to... Ooh, that's a good one. Yeah. I would fly. I think flying would be pretty legit.
Yeah. What is your superhero power now?
Patience.
Ooh. Beatles or the Beastie Boys?
Ooh. Beastie Boys.
Really? Wow. Musician who inspires you right now?
Musician who inspires me right now.
Contemporary one.
That's a great question too. There's so many people.
Mm-hmm.
Dun 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 dun. It's a long list, man. It's a long list.
Or how about first two that just pop in your mind, even though there's more?
Well, I mean, I just really like storytellers. You know, I like Nas and Slick Rick and stuff like that. Like,
yeah.
But then, I mean, contemporary. I don't know. I'll come back to that one.
Okay, we'll revisit it. Could you see yourself still becoming a cartoonist or comic book illustrator, you know, in the near future, perhaps your next book?
I think so.
Yes.
I think so.
I think you should still follow that, to be honest, if I just could add my little two cents.
No, I appreciate that.
Book you're currently reading, if any.
I always have a copy of the Bhagavad Gita close at hand. That's my go-to.
Yeah. Define love.
It's undefinable.
Musician who inspires you.
Current musician.
Yes, contemporary musician.
Ooh, gosh.
Fine.
It's tough for me. That's a hard one for me.
How about maybe someone that you worked with? I guess all of them.
Yeah, they're all good.
Okay. You're like myself, MC Yogi. That answer works.
Nah. I would say, like, honestly, it's really like, you know, there's certain producers that I really vibe on. Like I'm kind of like a beat sort of fanatic, and you know, I chop drums and make stuff, and you know, I produce as well, but it's really in kind of a messy, haphazard way, and I just kind of find stuff that falls together and sounds kind of tight and dope, weird, and I love sounds, and there's just so many producers that I really love, like Pete Rock, old Kanye, like just. You know, this is a long list for me, so it's hard to just nail it down to one.
Well, it shows you're passionate about it. I love old Kanye, too. So, this is a big question.
Yeah.
The universe gave you free billboards to share one message across the main highways in major cities all around the world. What would these billboards read?
Put your phone down.
Oh, my God. I love that. Oh, that's so great. And so one last question that I ask all the Your Own Magic guests. How would you advise the Your Own Magic listeners to create their own magic?
Well, it's so interesting because someone once told me, like, in the industry, you know, for me in the music industry, is like, you could have all the things necessary to be successful. You could have a booking agent, you could have a manager, you could have a record label, you could have fans, you could have a tour. But if you don't sort of create your own magic, if you don't you yourself internally inside yourself in through your process of your craft, whether it's music or anything else, like if you don't create your own magic, all those other things are meaningless because they all revolve around that single most important thing, which is like your joy, your enthusiasm, your drive, your spirit, your energy, your unique authentic voice, your signature. Like it all stems from that seed, that single innermost point of your spark, you know, like what makes you uniquely you, like your, the way you express it, the way you do it, only you can really put your signature on it like that. So, and sometimes it takes a long time to figure out what that magic is, but it's all about trial and error, experiments, practice, make mistakes, mess up, make a mess, like, you know, just get in there and just start to work with what you got, whatever your materials are, painter, writer, poet, photographer, whatever. It's just like, how do you bring that inner spark of that, your unique, authentic self out through the top layers of your mind, out through your skin, like out into the world around you? And that's really the call of the creative. Like, no one else can do that for you. You can take classes, tutorials, you can develop skills, which will be really helpful. But essentially, no one else but you can do the actual work of bringing your magic out into the open. And so developing some kind of practice, you know, some kind of rhythm or routine, so you're in the process, because you're never going to know what that magic is unless you're in the process of actually bringing it out.
Wow. Chills.
I think we all know that too. I think it's pretty, like, the thing is like, it's pretty, the I think all the truths we already know, like down deep, we already know what's mm-hmm. true. And we know that there's no shortcut. We know that no one else can do it. And even if someone else did come and gave you a bunch of money and like hooked you up or whatever, like that's going to pass. And then you're going to be left with yourself after it's gone. So it all bends and curves and is brought back to that magic, that spark inside of you, and our in the relationship we develop with it, you know, being in that conversation.
Yeah. And that's, even though we do know it deep down, when someone articulates it and it hits the core of us, like you just did, and chills arise, that's when we just are reminded of this truth within. So thank you for reminding us of so many truths and sharing your story.
Wow, thanks, Raquel. It was really nice talking with you.
It was amazing talking with you. Where can everyone find you and connect with you?
I would say probably the best, one of the best things you could do is pick up my book, Spiritual Graffiti. You can get it on Amazon. There's an Audible. And it's just a great way to kind of enjoy the story and the journey and get some teachings and inspiration along the way. And then, you know, I'm around all the social media platforms and whatnot. And actually, I got some great online yoga classes, which are really cool.
Yeah. Where can everyone find you online for yoga classes?
Well, there's two places right now. One is called Yoga Glow. There's some great classes on there. And then a new one that I just recorded, it's on with a company called Aloe Moves. And that one's really cool because it's got music and I'm working with my friend and DJ Drez. So those classes are really pretty fresh. And
it was great. That's the one I did. It was wonderful.
Oh, cool.
And the DJ in the background, it was like, oh, this is so exactly what I was looking for.
Yeah, Aloe Moves is pretty cool.
You're a great DJ.
Oh, thanks.
MC Yogi. Thank you so much. Seriously, it's so honored.
Oh, likewise. Yeah, thanks for hanging out with me. I appreciate you.
Yeah, I appreciate you too. And I'll be talking to your wife next. That's exciting.
Right on. She's a lot smarter than I.
Yomis, that is a wrap. I hope this episode was expanding for you in some way, shape, or form. Feel free to visit our site at yourownmagic.com or check out my shop, eyesofaspen.com. Connect with the other Your Own Magic listeners. We would love to see more conversations started on the Your Own Magic Facebook group. So with all that being said, thank you so much again for tuning in, and I hope you have a magical rest of your day.